This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The State Department of Energy and Natural Resources has started testing fish in the Dan River this week, trying to see if the fish are safe to eat after Duke Energy's coal ash spill this month. The Southern Environmental Law Center says the spill could have been prevented. They filed a lawsuit last year against Duke Energy, urging them to clean up their coal ash ponds. Jeff Tiberi is WUNC's Greensboro Bureau Chief, and he's here with an update. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well. I want to get to the suit in a minute, but tell us about the testing that Diener has just begun.
So Diener, as you mentioned, has started to test fish tissues, and they're trying to determine if the toxins, contaminants, heavy metals from coal ash are going to have an effect and to what extent they're going to have an effect on fish. That's, you know, what they're looking at. I did talk to one expert at Wake Forest University who said this is a good start. He's glad to see that Diener is doing it. He did point to several things. He said many fish have likely left the area. They've swam away from where the spill happened. The fish population, according to Dennis Lemley, who I spoke with, said the fish population won't be as affected as other forms of wildlife. And there's a bit of a flaw with this because this Diener has said this is going to serve as their baseline for testing over the next year. So they're going to do some fish tissue testing now and again in the spring and several times over the course of the next year. But one of the general problems is that, you know, this can't be or won't be compared to the sampling of fish tissues from before the coal ash spill.
Is that because there has been no testing?
As I understand it,
essentially,
yes.
There is no baseline, so it's hard to know what you're comparing it with. And I'm guessing there are other tests available and other testing has been done. This is the third largest spill, so there is the second and the largest spill to learn from. But I guess we'll hear more about that as the weeks and months wear on. So let's talk about that lawsuit now that SELC filed last year.
So they filed a series of lawsuits because they say that based on testing that they performed, Duke Energy was in violation of the Clean Water Act. And the Clean Water Act allows utilities to it regulates what kinds of pollutants and how much can go into waterways. The SELC filed these lawsuits, and Diener had 60 days to decide whether or not it would allow a federal lawsuit to go through or whether or not it would step in, blocking the federal lawsuit and filing a state lawsuit, which it did do.
So by stepping in, the State Department of Energy and Natural Resources blocked the federal suit brought by the Southern Environmental Law Center and ran its own suit. And then they reached a settlement. Our state Diener and Duke Energy reached a settlement. Tell us about that.
Well, they reached a proposed settlement, and there are 14 different sites that Duke Energy has around the state with 31 coal ash ponds, and the proposed settlement was for two of the 14 sites, one outside of Asheville, one outside of Charlotte. It was awaiting awaiting approval from a state judge earlier this month. That proposed settlement would have included a $99,000 fine, which John Scavarla, the head of Diener, notes would have been the largest fine that Diener had ever issued to Duke. The environmentalists push back by saying this is a very light tap on the wrist for a company that netted $19+ billion last year. And the environmentalists also say the proposed settlement didn't include any type or specific timeline for cleanup or removal of the coal ash.
All right. And SELC had filed this suit, which means they had done a fair amount of preparation to get ready for this, to bring it to federal court. So did the State Department of Energy and Natural Resources, Diener, involve SELC in any of these conversations and ask about any of their preparation?
They were not included in the conversation, and they were not part of the settlement process. This was largely a conversation or series of conversations between Duke Energy and Diener.
And as you said, the state has issued proposed a $99,000 fine. This is a $50 billion corporation. So whether or not it's the largest ever imposed, certainly not a large part of the corporate picture over at Duke. And that is part of the pushback on this. So where does it stand now? You've got a federal suit that was blocked by Diener's intervention, a $99,000 proposed suit, but no cleanup is part of that, part of the conversation.
No, and what happened was a week after the spill, Diener turned around and went to the judge and said, hey, if you would, hold off on ruling on our proposed settlement for now, which the environmentalists said that they felt that was an indicator that maybe Diener had recognized that this settlement didn't go far enough. Well, we find out today there was I spoke with Frank Holloman of the Southern Environmental Law Center, and it appears as though by March 21st, Diener is going to ask a judge to again consider a settlement. It could be the same settlement that was proposed late last year, or there could be some deviations to it. So Diener might be again asking a judge to consider this $99,000 fine with no specific cleanup plan or requirements, or they might be adding on to that proposed settlement. We will know in the next month.
And the possible outcomes, the judge could accept the settlement, we'd go forward with that, or reject it. Would that mean automatically that the federal lawsuit brought by the Southern Environmental Law Center would be back in play, or would it have to be refiled? What would happen if the judge rejects Diener's settlement?
That's a great question, and to be perfectly honest, I'm not 100% sure. I don't know if there's another opportunity for a settlement, if it automatically kicks back to the federal lawsuit or not.
Now, one of the things that John Sclavara, who is the head of Diener, has said in criticizing the SELC is that they've been imposing a one-size-fits-all solution, but in fact they've had multiple solutions and multiple approaches to various pollution suits that they brought, one in South Carolina, which is different, and apparently that did go through and there's a settlement in the works, right?
Yeah, there was a settlement that it's beyond the works, I guess you could say. They have the two utility companies down in South Carolina, smaller than Duke, though big companies. One is a publicly owned company, one is a publicly traded company, have agreed to clean up coal ash. One of the companies has already begun removing coal ash. SCENG, South Carolina Electric and Gas, has already removed about 650,000 tons of coal ash, I believe, to a lined landfill. And the other company, Santee Cooper, has agreed to do that as well. The main push from the environmentalists has been to move coal ash away from unlined lagoons and these basins that essentially have dirt-made dikes and dams to lined landfills away from waterways because the environmentalists say it continues to seep into groundwater.
So there are other settlements, other approaches. Sclavara says SELC is guilty of one-size-fits-all. SELC says Sclavara has proposed a settlement which is one-size-too-small. We'll see how that plays out. But you recently visited Wake Forest University. You spoke with some people who are doing some their own research on this spill, the impact of the current spill. Tell us what you found.
Yeah, so I spent a little bit of time with Miles Silman and Max Messenger today. Max is a grad student. Miles is a biology professor. And they put together an unmanned aircraft, a drone, and flew it over the coal ash pond where this spill happened a couple of weeks ago. What they did was they attached a Canon camera, just a simple point-and-click camera that you or I could buy at a Best Buy or Amazon or something, and they wanted to kind of survey what was going on. And in their words, this was to have some independent data and looking at how much coal ash really came out of it. And in the words of Max, he said, you know, we didn't think Duke was not telling the truth, but we felt it was really important to have some independent knowledge on this. So what they did was they had these pictures after the spill. They juxtaposed those to pictures from before the spill using images from Google Earth, and they made an estimate of how much was lost from the coal ash lagoon, and their results indicate that they're generally close to what Duke estimates.
So their estimates and Duke are pretty close.
Yes.
And how much is that, and what currently what are we looking at in terms of the estimated cost of cleaning up this spill?
So the rough estimate, we can do it in tonnage or gallons or volume. We're going to stick to tonnage because that's what we've been using throughout reporting this story, which is somewhere between 30 and 39,000 tons of coal ash. So that's the amount, the massive amount, which should be noted is very, very much less than how much coal ash spilled in Kingston, Tennessee in late 2008, though this still, as you've mentioned, as we've talked about before, is the third largest coal ash spill in history. So another person I spoke to at Wake Forest is named Dennis Lemley, and he has studied 23 different sites where there have been coal ash spills over the years. And what he looks at is the impact on wildlife and animals, people, property values, the local economy. And in the end, generally speaking, what he says is his initial estimate boils down to about $1 million per mile. And this is a way he's looked at it before. So he says, based on what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said last week, that coal ash has now traveled 70 miles downstream. His initial estimate is that the cleanup for this will be $70 million. And he did say he expects that number to rise with time.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank.
Jeff Tabiri, WUNC's Greensboro Bureau Chief. Just ahead, unlikely partners criticize energy monopolies and Duke Energy's monopoly on power in North Carolina. Stay tuned for the conversation on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.